Welcome to another session of the My First Job podcast. We think of banking as a conventional job, but today we're going to meet a person who's far from conventional. Jaya Janardhanan has headed major initiatives in modern banking to transform the banks that she's worked in. And it's part people like her, professionals, who have brought about a huge change in the banking scenario in India. But that involves a huge amount of change internally, as well as in the skill set of bankers. So she is not part of the group of people that you see in a bank. Jaya's work, I think, at least as far as I understand, is to manage the operations of a bank. And we'll understand a lot more. I'll be asking her some very basic questions because I'd like to understand what she does as well and where she is, how her career has evolved. So let's bring Jaya on and talk to her about her journey in banking. Welcome, Jaya. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Venu. Thank you. Looking forward for the show. Thank you.
Okay. So you started Crayon Tech Solutions about a year ago. You went from being a corporate person in the operations in a bank to starting your own company. So what is the thought behind it?
So I think there's a question that everybody has asked me, saying that why and, you know, what made you move into this space? So, you know, when I was working in the corporate space, and especially in the space of ops, service, digital banking, technology, you know, we always have somebody to help us strategize, okay, consult, okay, tell us what to do. The big question remains how to do. And that's where the entire strategy fails. And many a times we struggle quite a bit with respect to how to do it. You know, you can't pull out the business as usual people from their job and ask them to do the execution. So while strategy is in the front, but execution is way behind. And the space that suffers majorly in execution is operations, service, and the other projects that the management wants to execute. So, and I struggled myself quite a bit when I was holding those roles. And that led me to say that maybe that's a space where corporates need help. That's a space which needs support. And genuinely, I started this with the intention saying that why can't we work with corporates to help them work on their solutioning? Okay, it's not a lifelong requirement. For example, there are corporates which sit on the BFSI segment, which I specialize in, come back to say that, look, our manual of instructions, our standard operating processes are way behind what is happening today. The manual of instructions written in 2012 has nothing to do with what is happening today. But they were not able to make it, and our regulators are quite strict about the kind of processes and the manuals that we have in place when they come for the audit. So work with them, and that's a short-term thing. You know, you help them, get them to place, and make them be in line with what they require. That's one example I kind of came up with. So there are a lot of other areas which corporates struggle. And I said, this is maybe a space that I have specialized for the last 27 years as a banker. So let me kind of set it up. And obviously, the thrill of being an entrepreneur is something extremely different. After having been in senior positions for the last 15 years as in the CXO positions and in the senior leadership positions, I had a huge struggle managing the corporate politics and manipulations. So I said I needed to do quality work. I needed to make a difference to the BFSI segment. And maybe that's where, you know, people will look at you as saying that you've made a difference to what you have experienced. You know, you've brought the experience to the table. And that's how I don't call it as consulting. I call it as Crayon Tech Solutions. And that's where the whole journey came.
That's interesting. Do you remember when you opened your first bank account as a child, when you walked into a bank?
My bank account, I got it opened when I started my job in ICICI Bank. And that's when I got my first bank account. Because you had to open an account because you had to have your salary credit there. So
Okay, but did you at some point say that I am going to be a banker, or this is part of a set of things? I'll figure out things as I go along. What are the, you know, school, college, what happened?
See, in the time that I had graduated, which is the 1988-91, that era of that particular period, you had no other great opportunities like today. You know, you have those multifold opportunities that are there across, right? So right. All that you knew was banks, okay, or the government jobs. I was sure I did not want to go to the government jobs, and bank looked very interesting. And that's where I kind of decided that I wanted to be a banker. Not something that I had planned at the age of 8 or 10 or 12, like today's kids know what they want in life after 15 years. But yes, when I finished my graduation, and I was like more or less convinced that I wanted to be a banker. How to get into banking, what to get into banking, what to do in banking, I had no clue. But I knew that I had to get a job in a bank. And that's where I focused myself completely on. I had many failures. I couldn't get through to a few of the bank's exams and all that stuff. But finally, I made my way through to ICICI Bank as a corporate bank. And obviously, yeah, I was there for a year and a half as a corporate banker. And then I realized that, and when there's somebody kind of came up with a great opportunity saying that we're setting up the retail business, we are planning to go big way in ICICI Bank. So we had a very senior, respected officer called M.N. Gopinath. So M.N. Gopinath had put across a slip against his cabinet saying that we are setting up a retail business in the bank, and whoever is interested in joining the retail vertical, please put in your name here. And I was the first person who went and put my name there saying that I want to join. And that's how my journey in retail started. And then it's been all along.
But at the point when you wrote your name, were you fairly clear about what this, or it was an evolving sector? I just don't understand what happens in retail operations in banking. So if you could explain that in very simple terms.
I think it's a very nice, interesting story that I can tell you about, because, you know, when I wrote my name there and he said that, Jaya, you're in corporate banking. Do you really want to get into retail banking? I said, and I don't know why, maybe it was an inherent quality in me that I started taking risk at that time. Okay, that was a risk-taking trait I had. So I said, yes, sir, I'll come into retail banking. So I had not worked in a branch. I did not know how to handle cash. I had no idea about anything what happens in a branch. So what happened is he said that, look, we have to set up the centralized operations for ICICI Bank, which is going to be the future of the industry, in the financial industry. And he was a visionary. Let me tell you, he was a visionary. So I said, I'll follow you. I'll learn what you tell me. I will learn what you say. He said, okay, fine. He said, go and sit in a week in the DMAT operations. And believe me, Venu, DMAT operations that time had just started. It was in a mess. People had no idea what a DMAT account is, everything. And I also went and sat in that mess completely. And it was learning from opening a DMAT account to dematerialization to a TIF. All those learnings happened for almost 6 months. And I remember when I moved into this retail space, I had my colleagues coming and telling me, you know, Jaya, I have seen people falling into, getting into trouble, not knowingly, but you're getting into trouble. I mean, people get into trouble unknowingly, but you're getting into trouble knowingly. I said, why? He says, who the hell would leave a corporate banking life and get into retail banking? You're going to make a mess of your career. I said, it's okay. I'll just try it out. And after DMAT happened, everything got streamlined. People also started understanding. Things started falling in place. Mr. Gopinath came and said, look, we are setting up the centralized operations for the bank, and clearing is the first activity we will take it up. I said, sir, I've never done clearing in my life. He says, no problem. Go sit at Nariman Point for a 1 week, understand how clearing is done, and come back. So I go there, and it's a manual. In the 90s, the process was completely manual. Physical checks, RBI, clearing processes, and all that stuff. And I learned it for a week, and I came back, and I said, sir, I'm ready for the job. He says, okay, fine. So we had a place in Mahalakshmi office of ICICI Bank. And maybe, you know, a small place. And he said, yeah, this is where we'll start our operations. I said, so here? He said, yes. I said, where is that lap? Where is a desktop? Those days, laptops are not a common one. So he said, where's the desktop? He said, see, there's a desktop there. Take it, get the tech team to configure it. By in the branch clearing, you start managing centrally. And that's the journey of centralized operations. Okay. So that is how we started the centralized operations, bringing transaction management from the branches, building a model of what can need to be done then and there remains at the branch, what can be taken away and can be processed a little later moves into operations. So that's the journey and that's the segregation of operations. And that's how we started. Then came account opening, the team built, and then we kind of, you know, the team built larger. ICICI Bank had opened up 7 processing centers across the country, and things had more or less streamlined. And, you know, we started, you know, making sure that processes were streamlined. And those days, the word digitization was not there. The word automation was there. So while it was equal to digitization, it was still automation. So we automated a lot of processes, and things started falling in place. And then came a time when, and so largely all, most of the branches across the country were brought into the centralized operation. So everything started happening from this.
Can I just interrupt here for a minute? Which is,
yeah,
how did you figure out what to prioritize when your customers didn't know what DMAT was, when clearing had to move from offline to online? What was the decision process of saying, what is the priority?
So the decision to operationalize which activity depended upon what the customer's requirement was. If the customer needed something then and there, it remained at the branch. If an activity can wait for a few hours, that was moved to the back office. So that was the decision point of what should remain at the branch and what should move to the centralized operations. And that still continues as a basic step for a bifurcation. Even today, when you take a centralized operations, you actually think what should be given to customers then and there and what can wait. So that's where the decision making actually happens. So that is the whole process. So after I finished the centralized operations and I was ready, I mean, I was like, okay, somewhere along I realized I was not a BAU person. Okay, I needed something always new to do. And Mr. Gopinath came back again and said, you know what? We should look at quality. And all of us looked at him and said, what do you mean by quality? He says, see, going forward, operations service will all be quality dependent. You know, you will be weighed based on quality. So we said, okay. And we were all learners, right? So we were all listening to him. And he was a great teacher. He said, we should do Six Sigma. Okay. So no one knew what Six Sigma was all about. So he said, Jaya, will you do this project? I said, sir, if you teach me, I'll do, but I don't know what is Six Sigma. He says, no problem. Next day, I find a laptop and a mobile phone on my table. Okay. He says, we are tying up with a consultant, the ECS group, and we are going to work on the Six Sigma processes for operations. Again, people came back and said, Jaya, everything is so settled. You're heading this piece. Why do the hell do you want to get into a Six Sigma? But there's no, what is quality in operations? I said, he must be saying it because of some reason. There must be something to this. They said, you kind of are quite happy messing it up. But then to tell you the truth, by the time I was doing a Six Sigma, I had already crossed 2 promotions. But my colleagues who were there in who were there with me in corporate banking had still not even crossed 1 promotion. So I had walked up the ladder already. Okay. So therefore I was thinking that, look, maybe I'm doing something correct. I will listen to this senior boss of mine and walk up. And then we did quality, and then we did Six Sigma. Now Six Sigma was, none of us knew how an account was getting opened and how many days it took to open an account. The Six Sigma taught us that our account opening processes took us almost 23 days to open an account. And the form used to travel about some 4,000 meters across to get it open, which means form comes in the ground floor, goes to the second floor, comes to the third floor, goes to the second floor, first floor. And by the time the account gets opened, we have crossed about 23 days. The customer can use this account. Okay. And he said, and then I said, okay, fine, 23 days. So what is the market standards? No one knew what the market standards was all about. And we decided to do that. We said we all gathered together and said, okay, we'll do it in 12 days. Decent enough, 23 days to 12 days.
Yeah.
Now, 12 days was okay. We all started working, and the senior management team made a trip to the US or somewhere over there. And they went to a bank, and then they got this nice pre-generated kit where they had their checkbook, debit card, and their thing. And they come down and they say, look, if we have to become, you know, the best, then we better follow these standards, which means giving the kit across the counter and getting the account open on the same day. And we all fell off the floor. I said, how the hell can we do this? And as usual, we were, seven of us were taken and put into one conference room and said, don't step out of this room till you find a solution for this. Yes. And 7 days, of course, we had a tech person with us, we all that. And that is how ICICI Bank first launched the pre-generated kit, which had the checkbook, the debit card, and we were the first in the industry to actually come out with it. And we came back to say that we'd open the accounts in 3 days, and we moved it to 1 day and 24-hour turnaround time. And of course, the digitization changed the life. But these were those days when innovations and technology and, you know, the way we made a difference apart from all the other banks, this is how it all happened. So therefore, you realize why I'm so attached to operations, and therefore why I'm so passionate about operations.
No, and I think this shows, and I think you can see this.
Yes.
Okay. There are a couple of other people who have said hi, so I'll just show them. And so I think they're watching the show right now. And that's the good part. So here, you know, people who are interested can actually ask questions to you. And during a point when we think that, you know, without interrupting the flow, how do we take it from there? Okay. So this is great. So you had clearing, you had DMAT, and then you figured out how to open. Now these look like, but it was strange that it took 23 days. Today we've forgotten that.
Absolutely.
And we moved from a point where we used to go to bank to withdraw money every week or so, to a point when none of us probably remembers the time that we walked into a bank at all.
Or carrying cash in a pocket now.
Exactly. I mean, it's been such a sea change. Yeah. And people say that, no, but nothing much has changed. But of course, a lot of things have changed.
Banking has changed. There's a huge change which has happened.
And you were good. That perfect point where the literal changeover took place. It's almost as if, you know, you got into it. The years you've spent in banking are the ones which are the most transformative. Because you could talk of certain other things which could have happened. But we've moved exactly like you said, from not having to go into a bank to having so many payments handled. But tell me, what is the next stage? What happens after you sort of, what are the next stages in how your career progressed?
So one more interesting project of course, we did a lot of interesting projects in ICICI Bank. And ICICI Bank has a huge knack of putting very attractive names to all the projects. So there was one project which was called Project 123. And if I tell you what is the full form of Project 123, you'll have it in splits. So it was a project that was launched to do the 8-to-8 banking. Okay, so ICICI Bank was the first bank that came to do an 8-to-8 banking. So the branch opens at 8 in the morning and closes at 8 in the night, because we realized that customers needed to have the banking facilities throughout the day. So earlier it was 24/7. And then, so we walked in. So I had never seen KV Kamath in my life. Okay. So that day my boss said, Mr. KVK has called us for a quick meeting. So we need to go and meet him. So there were seven of us or eight of us who were there in his room. And, you know, we had only 5 minutes with him, Venu, 5 minutes. And he said, look, we need to change the way people do banking. We need to be more proactive to help customers. And I need to make sure that we as ICICI Bank goes as 24/7. And I did not know what struck us. I didn't even understand what he said. We come down and my boss sends a message to, says, all of you all gather in this room. And we all gathered. He put up he has a famous way of putting it on the board. He said, these are the steps. these are the people who will work on this project and we get started. So that 6 months, okay, to get to 8-to-8 banking, okay, I don't know when did I go home in the night, when did I come back in the morning. There was no night, there was no day. And we launched this project. Now, I'll tell you what is 1, 2, 3. It is 1st of Feb 2003. That's when we launched 8-to-8 banking. And we were the first in the industry to launch 8-to-8 banking. But that look, see, you're trying to do something which no one has done before. So there is nothing to copy, right? So everything is innovation. Everything is right there on the place that you're doing. So there's a lot of things that keep, you know, you keep learning as you do these things. And that's one best thing of ICICI Bank. The other piece which was very interesting in ICICI Bank, and I like to quote these because these are things that has taught us a lot, okay? You know, Madhavi Puri Butch, who is a CEO, who is a chairman for SEBI now, right? She used to head the, she was the head of the, you know, she used to be, was the head of the retail business vertical at that point of time. She had called us into a room and she mentioned the fact that this is the, she showed us a photograph. And she said, tell me which place is this? And I looked at the photograph, all of us looked at the photograph and said, someone said it's a marriage hall, someone said it's a function and all that. And then she flipped the whole thing. And that was an ICICI Bank branch of Vellore. Oh. And the reason is the moment the branch opens at 9 in the morning, it gets so packed that the BM himself is not able to come out of his cabin. There is a huge rush for people to put in cash. Okay, so it's very difficult. So she said, I can't keep increasing the square feet of the branch every year. You need to find a solution to handle cash. As usual, boss comes into the room and says, and you know, he has a solution, he has a model for everything. Okay, and of course, he's a mentor for me for life, but you know, he kind of came and said, this is how we should do it. And you know what he said? He said, create a drop box, create pouches, let people put cash into it, and people drop it into the box. You process it in the back office and make sure that the credit happens. It's so easy to say in 4 lines, right?
Yeah.
Imagine exactly. The challenge of implementing it. Okay, so now what happened was he told me that we should do it in plastic packets. And I was very sure that plastic packets won't work. I told him we should go for, you know, the paper packets with a paying in slip written on top of it. He said, no, it'll not work. It's a bad idea. So when I went to Vellore branch, I went there and positioned myself for about, you know, for about 1 week before to understand how the whole thing works. It's good to say, you know, put cameras, put boxes, put processing, how to do this? Where is the infra? So I went down to the Vellore branch and I kind of asked a few customers, if we do this, how will you do? They said, no, I think we'll do it and all that. Then I said, without showing my boss, I had prepared a paper packet and I prepared a plastic packet. I said, which of this will you choose? They said, paper packet. So I did not tell my boss. I created the whole bunch of paper packets with the paying in slip written. And on that, and I, you know, of course, worked with the team, put the camera behind, put some people crossing, all that I did. And 26th of Jan, I said, we will launch the, and this was called as, Project Crisp. Now, I can tell you what is Project Crisp. Cash received in sealed packets.
Okay.
So it's Project Crisp, right? I go there, I said, so Project Crisp is done, and you know, we launch it on 26th of, I put somebody on the front end, they talk to customers nicely, I had kept even the plastic packets, I kept even the paper packets. We saw the customers pulled out the paper packets, put the cash, sealed it, put it in the box, and we started the process. Everything worked fine. So he lands after 2 days. I said, you come and see how the process works. He lands up after 2 days. And he's shocked to see that there is only paper packets and there is no plastic packets, people. He said, but I told you it has to be plastic packet. I said, the answer is for you to see on the front end. There's only people are picking up the paper packets. Then he said, okay, fine. And that's the time he said, I agree with this, what you've done. But you won't believe, while that changed the way how the whole process worked, the cash customers started believing. When I left Vellore and I was traveling back to Coimbatore and I had to implement this, I had got almost messages from all the branches across the country saying that, when will you come to introduce Crisp in our branches? And the hilarious part of this whole project is, Mr. KVK goes to Mangalore branch, okay? And he sees these customers picking up this paper packets, putting the cash into it and putting it to the drop box. So he goes and asks the counter, what is people doing? And people very nicely say, that's Project Crisp. So Project Crisp has become so famous while it has solved a lot of the cash related issues and process and problems. But it became very famous. I think it's about, I think in the last maybe 7 or 8 years, they moved it out because they found a lot of fraud happening with 500 notes. So that's when they kind of decided to change the process.
Yeah, so questions that I wanted to lead up to. In the initial stages, you know, if a person is handing over the money to the cashier, it's being counted and then it goes into the, versus putting it into the thing, you're not sure. So how did you build trust? How did the customer trust?
So first and foremost is the customer can, where the customer is dropping the cash in the box is actually there is a CCTV camera.
Okay.
Which shows which customer is dropping the cash. When the box is taken behind, there are two cameras which actually focuses on the box in the entire process. So that whole area from the time you remove the box, open the box out, if you take a packet, it is kept in front of the camera. So the details of the customer is captured on the camera. So Jaya knows Jaya's packet and then they open it. So the whole process is monitored under camera. Tomorrow, this customer comes and tries to dispute with me. I was given the branches were given the ownership and the responsibility to show the CCTV camera to them. So nobody could try to, you know, play around with the information. So that is how the trust was built. And the credit happened. With, see, the only challenge was I'm standing in a cash counter. I'm getting the credit then and there. If I'm getting the credit in the next 30 minutes, I'm okay. So therefore, the moment the customer gets it SMS, it's a very validation that, you know, that trust started then building in. That's how the whole process happened.
Right.
So these are some of those episodes.
It's amazing how such a small thing like having to deposit cash on a daily basis when you scale it. Like you said, it was like a marriage hall. And most people don't even understand that in certain branches. Because if you go to a bank and there are no people in the thing, you assume that banks all over the country are exactly the same. Whereas you had the ability to see differences in the way people operated. And like you said, by the time you came out, people are already saying, when are you going to come to our branch? Okay.
So because I couldn't go to all the branches, we had created a CD of the processes and we couriered the CD to all the branches across. So they knew what steps had to be followed, just like a standard operating process.
No, it's amazing how... For something like, and these are processes that you never think about in the normal, what do you say, schedule of operations. Absolutely. I mean, there is no manual which says this is how you collect cash. But why did he suggest that you put it in a plastic packet? Because I would think that a person doesn't want to see the amount being put in.
So that was basically to give us the comfort that the customer has deposited cash. Okay. If people just, okay.
Fair enough. Okay, so moving on from here, you've got 1, 2, 3, you've got Crisp under your belt, you've been moving up the ladder, things have changed, your colleagues who told you you're doing the wrong thing are now asking, what should I do in my career next? So what happens from here on?
I took up a very challenging opportunity at ING, Vysya Bank, now at Kotak. And so I also got a very interesting and a very, very, very great boss as the chief operating officer, an Australian who taught me time management and of course, very, very constructive way of how things have to happen. So one of the challenges, so it was very important to, and there was a marriage of Vysya Bank and ING, which was still struggling to kind of stabilize. And that's when we said that we had to do something at the branch level for customer experience. And he said, see, we have to do something to manage the processes at the branch. And that's when this whole idea of customer first project came. So we identified 10 processes at the branches and we decided to work on it. One of the earth-shaking changes that happened in ING Vysya project of customer first was it was like a chicken and egg situation. When you tell the branch why a customer is not moving into net banking, the answer that you get back is we send the passwords, but it comes back. So then you have to keep sending it back and the customers keep say they don't get it. So it was every time you had these points coming up. So one day when we were doing a brainstorming session among the various pluses, we were trying to figure out the top 10 issues. And of course, this was the top of the chart. And we were sitting in doing a brainstorming session. And suddenly the idea struck us that why don't we give a password across a counter? And you can imagine what compliance would have come up with, right? They were like all over the place. How the hell can you say that you can give the password across the counter and all that? And then we kind of broke through, discussed. And we said, okay, fine. It's a number that doesn't hold any value. It's just one number. Only when the customer walks into your branch and he submits your KYC documents, will you link this number to his account. So truly you become an anywhere banking, and truly a customer can walk into any branch and take. And then customers and banks, branches can also start pushing customers towards using net banking. And then it kind of flew with everybody. They said, yeah, that's a great idea. Then suddenly they came back and said, but see, net banking is okay, but we have also customers walking in asking for checkbooks. We said, okay, let's do one thing. But let's set up an auto trigger of the system. And whenever the check reaches a particular level, let's auto trigger. Oh, wow, that's a great idea. Then we said, okay, then why don't we implement this, the PIN also? So therefore, net banking password, ATM PIN, and check became a self-driven processes, okay, as part of customer first project, okay? So it changed the way how industry then went on to do this, because this then went to be replicated in many other banks. So those days, unlike today, when you talk about a green password or whatever it is, but those days, physical password was required, right, to manage your ATM PIN or your net banking and stuff like that. And for checkbook, you had to go to the branch counter. For checkbook, you don't need to go to the branch counter. Self-triggered processes happen. Net banking became a self-driven. While these went to get CIO awards and other things, what benefited us was that the way many of these processes, which were bottlenecks as part of the customer-centric activity, kind of, lowered out. And then many of the banks then followed suit to say that this is the best way to manage, transition towards the channels, etc., and all that. So while ING gave me that with my COO, it opened up a lot. So while I always had a flavor for innovation, I was always someone who was always looking forward for doing something very differently. You also need to have somebody to actually help you with it. It has to be supplemented with somebody encouraging you. And that was a very fortunate part in my life. My bosses, my mentors, they were all there saying that, okay, yes, think through it. This is the right decision to do. Whether it's a career or whether it's a functional role that I do, that's where things happen.
And when you started off, one of the things that you said is we need to do something, but how? That is often the question that a lot of these questions are never answered. And I see it with banks even today. There are banks for whom I have received the, let's say, the credit card, and then the password comes via an envelope several days later. And these two things never coincide. So you never get around to, so the friction that is created is still being followed today. That's the strange part. I'm saying you had a process which you worked so far back, but yet it doesn't seem to have percolated across all banks, because they're still struggling with some of these.
It all depends upon how, banks are open to innovation. Let me tell you, ICICI Bank was way ahead as far as innovations were concerned, as far as allowing people to generate ideas. Their policy used to be, if there's an idea, try it out. If it fails, pull it back. If it works, go forward. And that's how you see ICICI Bank, the net banking was way ahead of its time.
Yeah,
that's true. Way ahead of its time. Who would ever think that an ATM like this across the country was set up when no other banks had so many ATMs before? That bank was a visionary, at least when we started off. Of course, they're still doing extremely well. But a net banking in terms of what I remember, I don't want to quote banks, but ICICI Bank had a process of adding a beneficiary and getting to pay the beneficiary within 30 minutes of registration, where other banks had to go and give a physical paper to the branch to add a beneficiary, which changed much later. So the process, it all depends upon bank to bank. When you do a comparison today, also when I was working for the other banks, when you sit in the discussion table, the point is, who should you follow? Is it ICICI Bank or is it HDFC Bank? These are the two banks. Of course, Kotak has also come into the picture. So which bank do you want to follow? When it is growth, when it is innovation, when it is expansion, the thought is always ICICI Bank. When it is compliance, when it is process driven, it is always HDFC Bank. There's always this debate. So both can't work together. You have to choose one over the other, right? So that's how the point.
Well, that's a very interesting conflict in terms of how do you want to establish, what systems do you want to establish? Yeah. Because, and it has to go with the ethos of the bank. It can't go into something which is completely new, because obviously there is a certain system in place and people believe this is how it's done. So whether you want to say it or not, that's how it gets done. Which, okay, but you mentioned another thing, your Dhanalakshmi Bank, where you went in for a digital transformation. What happened there?
So Dhanalakshmi Bank was a regional bank, which was in existence for over 80 years then. And there was a change in management, and the new team came in to talk, to take the bank, to make it very universal bank, okay? Make it as a large bank, focused bank. And that's where I kind of joined there to head the operations and service. There it was like the story was the same. ICICI, the account would get opened in 25 days time, and you know, and so go back to the ground level. Now the challenge was the need to set up operations was there, but the decision was where to set it up. And the mandate was very clear, it had to be set up in Thrissur. Okay, now Thrissur being the heart of Kerala, and every second day you had a red flag in the front of the as a strike. I was like, how do we do it? We said, fine, that's not a problem. Let's go ahead and set it up in operations. We had a very good team there. Okay, we had a very good setup over there, people over there who cooperated fully about it. And they're very excited to make this whole thing happen. Now, so what happened? Actually, this bank used to open about 1,000 accounts or less than 500 accounts in a month. And suddenly, the business plan was to open 1,000 accounts a day. Everybody was like, how the hell could you open 1,000 accounts a day? CEO said nothing doing, that's an object. So I set up the operations, I set up the floor, and there was a head of operations, and I went back to Bombay. And suddenly I get a call one day. And I said, what happened? They said, look, we have 20,000 forms lying in the operations and we don't know what to do. And by then I had already got distress call. Everybody had started calling, accounts are not getting open. Sales guy, sales head is shouting on top of his voice. CEO is fuming, angry. So I take a flight and fly, go to Cochin, and I hit to the operations shop. And this is at about 8 o'clock in the night I reach. I see forms lying all over. Nobody had an idea. There are some 4 people sitting in the operations, and it was a complete mess. So first was to bring in people. Now, where do I get people overnight, right? That's one part of it, right? Second is there's so much of backlog. What we did not realize was whenever Kerala was shut, right, other states were open.
Okay.
So form came in, but there was no one to open the account. That's where the whole issue happened. So 8 o'clock in the night to 11 o'clock in the night, the plan was how to manage this backlog and going forward, how to manage it. So what happened is next day, we put up a piece of paper circular across all, you know, NITs and the APTECs and all those people, saying that we're looking for data entry operators. And that full morning to evening to night, we were interviewing students. And we got a few of them. Okay, we took 10 of almost some 7-6 hours to train them the data entry part of it. And then we finally, now the point was, it's a big hall. Okay, there are people sitting on it. How do you make sure these forms reaches the desk accordingly, instead of them having to get up and come and go and go? So I told them, do you have a hospital close by? They said, yeah, but why do you need a hospital? I said, let's go to the hospital. I will tell you why I need a hospital. So we went to the hospital, and there's a staff of Dhanalakshmi Bank who knew somebody there. I said, go and ask him to give us a tray. The tray that they carry for medicines and all that, ask them to give us a spare tray. So this guy went inside, did some jugaad and all that, came out with a tray. I said, let's take it to the office. So we took it to the office. And then we told the office boy, now your job is to take the forms on this and keep moving the tray aside and move the forms to each of the desks so that these guys don't have to get up. When they finish doing the data entry, put the forms back and get it over here to give it to the supervisor. So they said, okay, fine. So then it happened. Then I had to make sure that we had to move this working hours to full 24/7. Now imagine trying to create a night shift in Kerala. Okay, I was in dread trouble saying that, okay, these guys will all stand up and protest. But fortunately, I got the support. And then what I did was, the three of us, there was a CTO who was then there, John, and then there was this head of association was Mohanan, and I, we split our day. So I would work from the normal office hours from morning to evening. I would come to the back office operations. I would sit till 12 o'clock in the night, work with the team to make sure that they streamline the process. I would get dropped at home by somebody else. And then Mohanan would come in the morning at 4 in the morning. He would be there till 9. And then he would go back and get ready to come to office. John would come from Alibay to office at 9 o'clock. And he would be there for the whole day till I come back in the afternoon. So this we did for almost a month till we realized that things are falling in place. And it has started becoming it's become a flow now. It's become a BAU. And that's when I went back. So for me, getting these firefighting and challenges is a big thrill. Otherwise, there's no fun, right? So
this is precisely the kind of thing that most people run from. And you run towards it.
I remember the hospital authorities asking me, why do you want this particular tray? How to explain to them I wanted for account opening processes. So I told them, I need it. I'll explain to you later. And I managed to get it.
Okay. Now, you told me at some point during our early discussions, you said that risk was not something, at least banking risk was not something that you particularly liked early on. But then in Bank of America, you did ops plus risk. How did that happen?
So it's very interesting because I always found risk coming and telling me what not to do and not how to manage risk. Okay, so that's the reason I hated risk. Because every time, I'm an ops person, but I'm always a business at heart. Okay, because I think they bring the bread and butter. Okay, so you have to do everything that helps the business grow. But risk, I always felt that would tell you how not to do, what not to do, but not how to circumvent it. There was never an answer for that. So when I was called for an interview at Bank of America and I met the CEO, Kaku, at that point of time, she said, Jaya, you have done ops all your life. Why don't you try risk? I said, no, I've never done risk. I don't understand risk. She said, that's all the more reason you should understand risk. And as a risk-taking person I am, I said, no, let me find out what is ops risk. And that's how I took ops risk. But that 3 years in that organization changed my attitude towards risk and changed my... So today, when I'm doing any project with anybody or in my role post that, my thought process is, if I do this like this, is there a risk associated? And how do I circumvent it? How do I build processes to make sure that I don't get into an operational risk? It made me more mature as an individual in the area of operations. And that's where I kind of, thank Kaku because I kind of have a different. While I understand ops risk now, I mean, I can make sure that with any processes we do, we take that into account and, work on that. So that's again was a risk I took.
Yeah. The other great part of what you just said is that having had all this experience in operations, you knew what was practical risk and what was risk which was going beyond a certain level. So it's almost as if you were able to say that this is what is actually required, because I know that some of these systems can break when pushed beyond a certain point. And this, I agree, because yes, you can't have systems in place beyond a certain level because you have to safeguard your interests, which I think is not the way. Most of these are silos. People work either in this or in that. And they set up these things saying, I know risk. You don't know risk until you've actually gone through it. And some of these, like you said, you can't predict. Like you said, overnight, that sentence I think was very insightful. Kerala closed down, but the rest of the country didn't. Which means that it's not something you anticipate, that work will go on, things will come, and then you'll have to figure out how to, you mentioned briefly that you were one of the earliest to get robotic process automation, RPO?
RPA.
RPA. What exactly does RPA do?
So, see, wherever you find, you know, voluminous processes, wherever you find manual processes, and wherever you find monotonous processes where the volume is large, the process is the same, okay, and you need to deploy manpower. You cannot deploy manpower because, see, I'll tell you where it all started from. So when I was in Ujjivan, and I was there as ops was one of my responsibilities, the team came and told us that, you know, and I used to notice one girl when I used to go home in the evening. I see her sitting there. Next day morning when I come, she's still there. So one day I asked her, you don't go home. She said, no, I go, but I go late and I come early. I said, why? So she said, see, I do the IMPS recon. And because the transactions have grown so large, it crosses the 1 lakh Excel limit. Wow. Feel. So therefore, I have to break the files, and therefore, and because the settlement has to be done on T+1, I have to make sure that I do this, and I have to be there for the long hours. So I had met up with one of the vendors in sometime back in my previous organization, and they had said about the same thing, voluminous, manual, and you know, RPA can help you and all that. So I called them. I said, look, I have this problem. And is there a way you can? He said, of course, we can solve it. I said, okay. So I told the team, let's do a POC with a client. So they said, why should we do POC with one client? Let's do POC with three clients. So, okay, fine. Okay. So they did it with three clients. So the three partners, they did POC. They said, okay, when we are comfortable with this guy is able to. So I said, okay, fine. So the whole processes of the Excel recon, which was done, was moved into it. So the whole RPA, the product, actually what they do is it actually processes it by itself, defined a logic that you put in the system, and it gives you an output that you need to just work on the exception. So what happens is the RPA is set to work post you download all your files. It works after beyond a particular business after the hours, sets up the outcome and pushes it in. So when you come in the morning, you have a file which will give you the exception. So what you used to do with lakhs and lakhs, you just have to manage some 10, 15 line items and bet. So she then, she couldn't believe it. Okay, so she said, she was still very, after the whole thing happened, she said, no, I can't believe it. Maybe the data is wrong. How can something happen like this? Then she herself sat and reconciled the physical versus the RPA. And she said, no, I'm happy now. Wow. So we used to spend about 8 crore rupees giving to multiple partners and vendors for recon. This whole process was done with just 3 lakhs with a studio license. Okay. It was a phenomenal change. I mean, everybody appreciated it so well because it was this early days. See, today you can hear RP and AI all across. Anything and everything you do, people say, RP kar do, do AI and all that. But that time it was just a new entrant in the market, trying to take that out and trying to put that. Today, Ujjivan has applied that in all their banking operations, back office, wherever there's RTGS, NEFT, everything, because you can deploy it across. But that time, it was taking a risk on putting it across.
Wonderful. Jay, I wouldn't have believed that I could hold a conversation with you for 50 minutes on banking alone, because my knowledge of banking is very rudimentary. But thank you for casting light on so many little processes, which when scaled to this level can suddenly pose new problems. So as we, move towards closing this out, I just want to figure out, what is it that you see when young people get into banking today? Or they're looking at banking and saying, okay, it's a boring job. It's not a boring job. What should I look at? What would your advice be?
See, according to me, no job is boring and no job is... And not to look at every job as exciting. Okay, so it's basically what you want to do in life is very important. And that sets your standards for anything else also. So banking for me, if somebody asks me, is banking boring? Banking is not boring at all. Banking is very interesting. And especially operations is very interesting. It's a new day, a new thing to look at, new challenge to handle. It's everything is new. Okay, so there's nothing that one should, you should not walk into something saying that, this is something like it's a time pass for me, or it's a retirement job for me, or it's something that I'm taking it up because I'm not getting anything. Then you will not like anything in life. Unless and until you create that excitement for yourself, you will never be able to enjoy any job for that matter. And that is something I think today's youngsters should take.
Look at. But, you know, one of the things you started early on is that you were willing to take risks. And that's one thing that I've seen in the people that I talk to, that the willingness to take risks early on and not stay in the conventional path seems to be one of those things which is, it's almost like you're saying, this is the formula, but I don't want to take that formula because I don't want to take risks. Is there a safe way to get to the top without taking, there isn't one.
See, every time I've taken a change of job, my father always told me, I don't think you'll ever get to gratuity. I said, I'm not interested in gratuity. Okay, he said, you will never, ever be able to get gratuity money. I said, I'm not interested in the gratuity money because it is giving me challenges. I'm able to do something very different. And he never agreed with that thought process of mine till he was around. So he, for him, it was, I was, you know, he thought that I was too bold and bindas. Okay, that's what he used to say. He says, you, how do you change job like this? Why are you changing job? Why are you not worried about security? And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So I have no answer on that.
So somewhere down the line, is that one of the things that, you know, there's a fundamental, what do you say? There's a, something that needs to be resolved because at one stage, you need enough experience to do a job well. At another level, you need to know exactly when you say, okay, I think it's time for me to change because A, I'm not getting as many challenges as before. Is that one of the things that defined how you made the move?
No. The move was made based on, so I never said, so, you know, whenever I was comfortable in a job, I never said, okay, no to an interview when somebody approached me. I said, why not? Speak. Let's know what the market has. And sometimes that has come out as something very, very different that I could approach. And that's something, and of course, I've always gone back to my mentor and asked him, okay, is this a step right? Sometimes he said, no, just keep quiet and sit back. Sometimes he said, yes, you should. Risk was something that he said, you should know risk. You should take that chance and do the ops risk role. And sometimes whenever there has been an opportunity, he says, why would you want to take that chance? Stay put. So these, see, you always need to, you know, have someone to whom you should talk to. Because it defines you whether you are thinking right or whether your decision that you want to take is going in the right direction. I strongly feel that, you know, all of us should have a mentor who should be there with us, whom we should be talking to, who will help us channelize our thoughts in the right direction. Looking back, I don't think any of my decision was wrong. And I don't think what I'm doing right now is something I'm doing. I mean, why am I doing this? Is this the right thing to do? No, I'm not. For once also, I'm not looking back and regretting any of the decision I've taken or that I'm taking. That's because there is always a validation done with a mentor. There's a validation done with somebody who you can talk to, which is what I keep telling in when talk to people. Have someone. Always don't be lost because all these things that you talk about, mental health issues, that issues, depression, everything arises because you're not able to open up and talk what you want to do, how you want to do. And these are some of the things which are very critical in life. So I never regret a decision I've taken in my life as far as my career is concerned. There has been goods and bads about my career. Okay, I have had my own challenges. Being a single woman in a boardroom, in a management committee, had its own challenges. I had to fight my way to get my voice heard. There are some times that I've had really bad arguments, okay, and had gone back home thinking, why the hell am I doing this job? But till the job excites you, till you love what you're doing, and till you find that there is people around you appreciating you, and you have the support to do it, just do it. You know, do not think too much beyond we create a lot of problems for ourselves because we just think too much, and I think that's the basic reason why all of us end up in a lot of trouble. So that's what I keep talking to people about.
It's so practical. I mean, the wonderful part about what you've just said is that the wisdom that you've imparted is all practical. It's something that can be done. But a lot of people try and find shortcuts, or they try and find ways which are not really, you know, the best ways to do it. Yes, you will stumble. But at the end of the day, you will have learned something that would probably not have come to you from anything else. I think we got so caught up in the conversation. You wanted to talk about Aspire for Her, which is something that you've been, which is very close to your heart. So why don't we close on that for today?
Yeah. You know, something that I always wanted to give back to the society and give back to the women folks is something that I found in Aspire for Her. And that's how I got associated with AFH and started working on that space, building the diversity ratio in the country, working with various corporates, working with various skilling agencies, working with various people to see how we can bring in, you know, build the diversity ratio in the country. The one piece that I'm working very closely, and I am very proud to share that, is I'm working very closely with the rural entrepreneurs from AFH. And that is, you know, building the financial literacy for that particular segment, because that's an expertise that we have. Okay, we understand financial space, we understand literacy, and we understand why financial independence is very important for women. And that's the reason why I said I will work on that space while I manage the ops and the tech for AFH. But rural entrepreneurship is a very, very specific space I work with in the financial literacy space. And today we have started off with Maharashtra and we plan to expand across the country. So I wanted to make a mention of this is because I want people to understand that it's very critical for us to give back to the society what we have gained. And the only way to do this is to get associated with organizations that work on that space. And that's why I wanted to make a special mention. Of course, the network, the people, the association that AFH has given me is phenomenal. And there's no comparison about it. But I think all of us will need to kind of, you know, like in COVID, they said, you know, break the chain. I will say build the chain. Unless and until you start working with the folks down the ground level and give them back what you have learned, you will never be able to bring them up the curve at any point of time. So that's
fabulous. I think it's been, I really enjoyed this conversation because thank you for being so open, so practical, and yet so insightful about so many of the things that we never understand are problems when seen at scale. And your approach and the way you solve problems and even the advice that you give people is so eminently practical. Thank you for being on the show, Jaya, and it was wonderful talking to you.
Thank you so much, Venu. I think every time I talk about my journey, I get very carried away because all these things are very close to my heart. And I think you only made it more and more, made me more and more happy today by having me to take walk through the whole journey. Thank you so much. It's been great.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you very much. That was Jaya Janardhanan. And it was a wonderful journey through the practical aspects of actually finding what it means to run banks at the national level. My First Job, the podcast, is a production from Ideascape Communications. Guest relations, promotions, and creative is managed by Deepa Ravi with occasional support by Venugopal Nair. Archiving and technical help is provided by LPS Jayachandran.